Welcome to Office Hours. I'm David Meltzer. Welcome to the SiriusXM studios in the Wynn in Las Vegas. And man, we have an incredible guest. But before we get to our guest, let's talk about our co-host today. We have the Hall of Famer himself, a dear friend, Marshall Faulk. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And of course, our friend Dennis Postum. Thank you so much for joining us. Incredible content provider, publisher, media expert, an extraordinary asset to the show. Thanks for coming as well.
Super excited to be here. Thank you.
And our newest anchor man, very rare we get a rookie in the anchor spot, but he was, like me, a self-appointed below average college football player.
Way below average.
Yeah, me too. I used to say I was average, and then my football coach later on in life was on one of my shows. He goes, "Let me just clear the record." You were below average.
I'm good with that. You know,
yeah, I'm okay. But you are an incredible anchor man. He is healing our health system. The king of healthcare. Great podcast, by the way, called Boombastic Health. Thank you for joining me, Bradley Bostic.
So fun to be part of the Office Hours community.
It is. And it is a community in a neighborhood. And one of our greatest neighbors is a man named John Assaroff. He has graced the presidents by being a two-time New York best-selling author. That's a big difference, by the way. Humbling as an author. You may be an Amazon best-selling author, but you can't cheat the code when it comes to a New York Times best-selling author. That's a real honor, in my opinion, and I don't want that lost with authors. But he's also been on huge shows, Anderson Cooper, Ellen DeGeneres, Larry King.
He's done it all.
Almost all. Lots more to go.
Nobody means the brain whisperer. Yeah. He knows more about the brain and how to utilize the brain to create what we want inside, to provide what we want outside. He has a book called Inner Size to exercise that muscle in order to effectuate what he started in The Secret with his vision boards and manifesting everything in life and business that you desire. The incredible John Assaroff, welcome back to Office Hours.
It is so good. No, let me start off. It is so good to be here.
And again. God is good as well.
God is good.
You know, understanding this idea of inner size for the common person, you have sophisticated knowledge of the amygdala, the frontal cortex, all these terms that I think separate us sometimes. Is there a simple way to talk about how we exercise the brain?
Listen, we exercise our biceps by doing curls, or our chest by doing push-ups, or we walk up a hill and we exercise our cardiovascular system in our legs. So by effect, you know, we're exercising muscles or organs. Well, think of your brain as having, you know, different neuromuscles. So the amygdala is just a place in the brain that controls emotions. The hippocampus is a place in the brain that you have short-term memories. And so all of these parts of our brain can be strengthened using inner sizes. So anything that we practice reinforces the neuromuscle. So if you practice being negative, you tend to be more negative. If you practice allowing fear to control you, then you tend to be more fearful. And by the same token, if you practice confidence and certainty and showing up in a state of expecting goodness, then that is what your brain actually strengthens, and you create that reality. So I like to consider inner size as the word that I use and hundreds of thousands of my students use to strengthen their greatest muscle ever, and that's their brain.
Amazing.
Man, yeah, you make it just sound so easy. Like that just rolled off your tongue.
And a little practice.
I bet. Just a little bit. But like, and you talk about so many things as a coach, but one of the things that you talk about for me all the time is personal development.
Yes.
And the relationship between your personal development and your success. And I was just wondering, for you, in your journey, what was a pivotal moment for you to where you started looking at your personal development and success, and then how does that translate when you're coaching someone else?
Yeah, great question. When I was in my teens, I got into a lot of trouble with the law. I was doing drugs, selling drugs, doing breaking and entries, drinking too much, being unhealthy, and really being embarrassing to my family and to myself, because I thought those were the things I had to do to succeed in life. And fortunately for me, Even though I left high school in grade 11, failed English and failed math and thought I wasn't smart enough, I met this one man at a lunch that my brother introduced me to him at. And during lunch, this guy asked me what I wanted to achieve in my life. At the time, I was earning $1.65 an hour working for Philips Electronics in the shipping department. I was living in my parents' home, and I was taking the bus back and forth to work every morning at 5:30, and I hated it. And this one guy said to me, "What do you want to achieve in your life?" And I said, "Well, I want to achieve making more money. I want to buy a car. I want to move out of my parents' house." He said, "Well, that's great, but what else do you want to achieve?" And I said, I haven't thought about it. I don't know. I don't have anything else I want to achieve. I was told I wouldn't amount to much if I didn't go to college and get a degree and follow some kind of a path. And he said to me, he said, "Listen, would you mind answering some questions for me?" And I said, "Sure." And he gave me this document. And on the document, it said, "You know, at what age do you want to retire?" And I said, "I have no idea what age I want to retire." He said, "Just write a number down." So I wrote down 46. He said, "Upon retirement, how much net worth do you want to have?" And I said, "What does net worth mean?" I had no idea. I was ignorant. So I wrote down, you know, a few million dollars because he told me that's how much you'd need to have to retire. What kind of car do you want to drive? And that was easy for me. Mercedes-Benz convertible. What kind of home do you want? I said, 4-bedroom house, 2-car garage. Where do you want to travel? All over the world. So I answered these 10 questions. And he looked at my answer and he said, "Listen, if you could achieve all of these things, would you consider that to be an ordinary life or an extraordinary life?" And I said, "Listen," his name was Mr. Brown, I said, "this would be an extraordinary life." And nobody in my family, immediate or extended, had ever achieved any of these things. My father's a cab driver. My mother's a seamstress at a department store. And he looked at me and he said, "I'm going to ask you one question. And the answer to this one question will determine whether you can achieve and have this extraordinary life." I was like, "Wow, okay, one question? It's that easy?" And so he looked at me and he said, "Are you interested in achieving and having these things? Or are you committed to achieving them and having them?" And I literally, this was 44 years ago, okay? I scratched my head trying to figure out what's the difference between interested and committed. And so I asked him, feeling stupid again. And he said to me, he said, "Son," he said, "when you're interested, you do what's easy and convenient." He said, "When you're interested, you allow your current results or your old failures to control your thinking." And he says, "When you're interested, you don't do what it takes to be successful." He said, "But when you're committed," and this is where my training began, he says, "you will upgrade your identity, who you believe yourself to be, to match the destiny you wrote down on this document. You'll upgrade your knowledge, your skills, your habits, and you'll upgrade your beliefs so that you believe that you can do this." And he said, "By the way, all of this is achievable, so don't wonder whether it's achievable." And so he leans and he said, "So are you interested or are you committed?" And I don't know why, but I just yelled. I said, "Well, in that case, sir, I'm committed." And he reached out his hand. I'm 19 years old. And he says, "In that case, I will be your mentor." I said, "Wow, that is so wonderful. What's a mentor?" That's how green I was. But that was the beginning of like setting a vision or some goals. First, I had no idea how to achieve it. But I pulled these ideas off of what I saw on television, like Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous with Robin Leach. I wrote it down on a piece of paper. But what he had me do every single day after I moved from Montreal to Toronto is he had me review what I had written that I wanted to achieve. He had me write out, what would I need to believe in order to achieve that? What skills would I need to upgrade? What would be the daily behaviors that I would need to take to develop the habits that would allow me to achieve these goals? So he followed up the vision and the goals with the beliefs, the identity, and then every day we did something called priming my brain. I would look at it. I would close my eyes. I would see myself achieving the income, the cars, the house, the charity, the contribution. I would feel it. And then I would take action steps every day for several hours to move towards that reality, even though none of it was true. So I started to behave in ways that I didn't behave before because I didn't believe in myself before. But he put me on a path to coaching me. And I remember this like it was yesterday. He said, if you invest 1 hour a day on personal development, you will achieve 940 hours of personal development work every year. He said, you can get good at knitting with 940 hours of training. You can get good at the Rubik's Cube. You can get good at just about anything if you're committed. And that was the beginning of me seeing myself differently. But he gave me some frameworks to believe, and he helped me understand a little bit about what was going on in my mind. And he was very into reading books and listening to cassette tapes back then, and learning from people who were the legends of that era. And he passed it along to me, and I became a voracious student because I started to see results within about 100 days, and it changed my life.
That's awesome.
And this is perfect because when we coach, we teach our clients consistency and commitment. And usually I suggest you do personal training as well with personal development. So yes, plug in your ears in an hour or two every day and you'll be further ahead.
Yeah, I call it exercise plus intercise.
Exactly. So that's what's going to be my question, because we also teach them about the victory journal at night and then your gratitude journal in the morning. Yep. How long should somebody spend in the neuro gym, and how should they build up those repetitions to get to where they need to be?
Great question. So, you know, when we're talking about behavioral change and looking to achieve results, now I can go and exercise right now and get the benefits of a good workout, whether I walk or go to the gym or do yoga or Pilates, and I'll get the benefits of that initial session. But what we do know is that when we do consistent behaviors, repetition, right, is the mother of learning a skill. But what happens in the brain, which is really my interest, is we're firing neurons in the brain. And the neurons, the brain cells that fire together, wire together. And the neurons that wire together become part of the default mode network and something called automaticity. Now, why is this important? Well, it's important because we want to automate any empowering, constructive, positive pattern as we're releasing any negative or disempowering pattern. So our habits are our patterns. We have thought habits, we have emotional habits, we have behavioral habits, which then leads to the effect, which is our results. So we know from some of the recent research in the university in Toronto that it takes about 66 days for us to create a strong enough neural pattern, like software in the brain, that overrides the pattern that is there now. So if you have a self-talk, a negative self-talk pattern, a pattern of a feeling down, a pattern of being depressed, a pattern of feeling unimportant or inadequate, then if you give yourself, and I use the 100-day rule with all of my students, don't start the process unless you're prepared to commit to 100 days of consistency just to develop the habit. Now, I prefer somebody say, I will do it for 1 minute a day for 100 days than 1 hour a week for 12 weeks.
For sure.
Why? Because if we develop the habit, that's the positive, constructive habit, then we can add complexity and intensity after the habit is built. So build the habit first, and the habit will build you. So the most important part is reduce it to the ridiculously small amount you have to do, not the big giant leap. And the reason for that is our brain is lazy. It wants to conserve glucose. The number one priority of the brain is conservation of glucose. Thinking requires glucose. Changing behavior requires glucose. Learning a new pattern requires glucose. And we have a brain that is typically lazy. And so if we just start off by reducing the ask, then we can create consistency. Consistency and perfect practice makes perfect. Consistency creates the pattern. The pattern then reinforces itself based on how the brain learns and repeats patterns that you would reinforce.
Love it. It's like compounded interest in your retirement.
That's exactly right.
Put in just a little bit each week, and eventually it just starts getting
neuroplasticity.
You got it.
That's right.
Yeah, what you're talking about reminds me of the book, The Power of Habit.
Yeah, Charles Duhigg.
A bit. But
with some additional sophistication around what kind of an approach can be used to really maximize the power of the brain. And we live in an age where people are starting to live longer.
Yes.
And one of the downsides of that is you see there's a fair amount of cognitive decline.
Correct.
And you look at all the problems with just even being able to fund healthcare. We've got, it's roughly 20% of GDP. Our outcomes aren't necessarily very great. As myself, an entrepreneur, operator, investor in the healthcare, health tech data world, I find this really intriguing. I'm curious to know, is your program, does it apply to the challenge of the aging?
Yeah.
The, you know, if I want to live to be 150, can I get on this program and I'm going to be sharp as a tack?
Well, you're going to be sharper than if you're not on a program. So I'll share a personal story. My mother left Romania when she was 12 years old with her 8-year-old sister when the Russians were invading Romania back during World War II. And she was manically depressed for decades, 50, 60, 70 years of being manically depressed. And one day, I was in Montreal. I used to go see her every 90 days. I'd go every 90 days. My brother would go 90 days. My sister lived there. One day, I went to see her, and she was in her wheelchair with her caregiver in the living room with us. And she was just sitting there, and I just arrived from the airport. I said, "Hey, Mom, how are you? I just came to see you." She goes, "Hi." I go, "Mom, like, I just flew in from San Diego. I'm here to see you." She goes, "I know." I said, "Okay, can I get you some water?" "No." "Do you want anything to eat?" "No." "Do you want a blanket?" "No." It was like depressed, manically depressed. The day two that I went there, I said to her, "Hey, Mom, can you just like move your hands up a little bit like this?" She goes, "No." I said, "Mom, I flew in from San Diego. I love you. I just want to help you." She goes, "No, leave me alone." She was like angry. I said, "Do you love me?" She goes, "Of course I do. Will you do me a favor? Would you just move your finger, one finger, just do it one, 2, 3. She looks at me angrily. "Fine. 1, 2, 3. I said, "Mom, your other four fingers are a little bit lonely. Could you just do the other four fingers?" And she's mad at me, but I got her into motion a little bit. So she did this finger, this finger, this finger, this finger. It took literally, you know, 6-7 seconds. I said, "Mom, your other hand is a little bit lonely now. Could you just move your finger?" And she's been depressed for decades. So she moved one finger, the next finger, the next finger. I got 5 that day on each hand. Following day, we did it again, and I had her move her foot up and her other foot up 5 times. By the time I left 2 weeks later, we were walking up and down the hallway. 2 weeks later, her caregiver was downstairs in the gym, and she was on the recumbent bike. Got her out of her depression because of one move. Move your finger. So we fired new neurons. Those neurons, you know, we celebrated. So she released dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin. So she started to feel a little bit better. And she wasn't suppressing. And she wasn't only suppressing, but she wasn't reinforcing the depression that she had. Just with beginning of a little bit of activity.
Yeah, that's powerful.
So yeah, it's very, very powerful.
There's a study I am somewhat on the periphery of that I'd love to talk to you about after this, but
sure.
Really amazing. And
yeah.
There is no more important connection to your overall well-being than.
Yeah. And I think it's important to know, and this is like a mind-boggling fact. Just like every gas-powered car functionally works the same, every electrical car functionally works the same, the $100 billion human brain functionally works the same. So if the functionality of the human brain works the same for Marshall, for you, for men, women, there's some differences, but functionally, if we know what lights up the electrical activity that releases the neurochemicals, mm-hmm. okay, by different parts of the brain, why not deliberately and consciously use the brain better? And that's been my area of curiosity and passion. And if I can get somebody to focus on self-talk, a little bit of emotional regulation, and a tiny bit of behavioral change consistently, we can see massive, massive changes. And I've seen it in hundreds of thousands of people that are in our programs around the world.
Well, I'll tell you this. He's from Canada, so hundreds of billions of dollar brain. It's with tariffs, it's probably $1 trillion brain for sure. For sure, especially Marshall's, because he's definitely the smartest man in this room. His brain's a little different. It functions the same. It just functions better.
Functions better.
Exactly.
He's been a high-performance athlete his whole life.
He is.
John, I know kind of your thoughts on visualization, all right? Yeah. And I was wondering, do you believe it's possible for people to achieve their goals without visualizing themselves having done it to some degree before they get to it?
Yeah, so let's back up for just a second and understand that every word that we use, you know, activates electrical activity and chemical activity, but also every word has a visual representation for that word. So when I say to you red apple right now, you're not thinking of REDAPPLE. You don't think of the letters. Your occipital lobe in your brain is just lit up with a red apple in the back of your skull. If I say to you, you know, white elephant, you see a white elephant in your head. So can we achieve our goals without deliberately taking some time to visualize? Of course we can. But most people that have a goal are thinking about it. They're talking about it. They're dreaming about it or daydreaming about it. Well, maybe they're not sitting there for 5 minutes and saying, I'm going to do a visualization session. But if you're a coach and you're walking your athletes through, you know, whether it's their play, you know, whether it's winning the league, the championship, the trophy, whether it's winning the day, they have to see that as you are talking them through it. Whether they believe it or not, it's another story. That's another part of this. But I think when we add visualization is a mental and emotional simulation. And the part of our brain that visualizes cannot tell the difference between something real or something imagined. So if I'm pretending to catch a football and catching it, or I'm actually catching the football, it's the exact same neural patterns in the brain that are activated. And so I can visualize 1,000 times more than actually going out on the field and catching a ball. So I can practice many, 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 many more times, you know, internally. And then I could use a variety of different, you know, methods to accelerate that and to accentuate it. But I think everybody that wants to achieve something starts off with a vision that they're either using words or images or some kind of an outcome that they're moving towards.
Now you know why I call him the Brain Whisperer. He's the CEO of the Neuro Gym. He's a friend of ours, friend of the neighborhood and of the show, the incredible John Asaroff. Thank you for joining us again. I'm David Meltzer here on Office Hours.